Hello, Adam. Very warm welcome to Centre Stage. Good to have you with us. Now, British Foreign Secretary William Hague has warned of significant costs facing Russia if its troops do not withdraw from the autonomous region of Crimea in southern Ukraine, echoing earlier ones by US President Barack Obama. Now, Russia, however, slammed threats of sanctions and boycotts against his country, stating that the deployment of Russian troops to Ukraine is only aimed at freeing the country from a spiral of violence. What is absolutely clear, though, is that tensions are very high in a country which has been dominating the headlines for weeks. Welcome back. Now, today I'm delighted to be joined by two guests. Now, here in the studio, I have the pleasure of being joined by a well-established political scientist, Dr. Mohammad Hassanhani. It's a pleasure to welcome you to Central Stage.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Now, let me just tell you that Dr. Mohammad Hassanhani is an academic staff member of the Faculty of Politics and Islamic Studies at Imam Sadiq University and fellow researcher at the Institute for Political and International Studies. Now, over the phone from a state in the southeast of the US, I'm pleased to be joined by a top political scientist, Professor Nader Entisar. Welcome to Central Stage.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good to have you with us. Now, Professor Nader Entisar is professor and chair at the Department of Political Science and Criminal Justice, University of South Alabama. Time for a short break.
Ukraine has stayed in the limelight since deadly protests of November. That was when the government decided to shelve a trade deal with the European Union in favor of closer ties with Moscow, which eventually culminated in days of carnage in Kiev, claiming almost a shocking 100 lives. In the meantime, Iran's foreign ministry spokeswoman has said Ukraine's future hinges upon national will and foreign non-interference. She said, quote, "The Islamic Republic of Iran observes the developments in Ukraine carefully. We emphasize on avoiding violence by both sides and that Ukraine's future would be realized through national will and mutual understanding by different political actors and foreign non-interference." It's fair to say that the current situation in Ukraine has turned into yet another battleground between East and West in general, and Russia and the United States in particular. Washington is stepping up its intelligence and surveillance operations against Russia in order to get inside the Russian decision-making cycle regarding the situation in Ukraine. During a phone conversation with Russian President Vladimir Putin on Saturday, US President Barack Obama expressed deep concern over the situation in Ukraine. Obama called on Putin to order withdrawal of Russian forces from Crimea back to their bases, warning that Moscow's refusal would impact Russia's standing in the international community. Putin, however, has said that Russia retains the right to protect its interests and the Russian-speaking population in Ukraine's southern areas. Last week at Center Stage, we quoted the Ukrainian ambassador to Tehran, Oleksandr Samarsky, as saying, "We will have no alternative other than having normal ties with Russia." Looking back on the unexpected developments of last week, we'll have to wait and see how long such normal ties can be sustained.
Hello again and welcome back. Now, everybody's talking about Ukraine and we are no exception. Now, in Kiev, the new prime minister, Arseniy Yatsenyuk, said the country would not bow to Russia's actions. He said, quote, an inadequate Russian presence on the territory of the Crimea is nothing but a provocation. And Russia's attempts to make Ukraine react in the same forceful way have failed. Now, Professor Entisar, what's your reading into this? Do you think Ukraine consider it too dangerous to react in the same way, or probably Ukraine actually is not in a position to do so?
Well, what Ukraine is, first of all, Ukraine is not in a position to do so, but Ukraine at the same time is hoping that there will be a more robust and proactive response on the part of the European Union and also NATO. I'm not necessarily talking about military response, but other forms of responses. So it's counting on the West, really, to counterbalance Russia, because it knows that by itself, Ukraine militarily, economically, and politically is not in a position to either threaten Russia, issue ultimatums, or otherwise try to counterbalance Russian influence.
So you're talking about actually probably other reactions, and basically Ukraine is pinning its hopes on Europe. But you know, the thing is that Europe, what Europe is at the moment offering is basically economic aid packages.
Yes. The European, the thing is what, well, let me give you a little bit. I'm not going to take too much time and go into, you know, historical strategic issues. But if you look at the, you know, region from south of the Baltics to the Romanian border, that region, historically, the borders there have been quite uncertain. And this is also a region where conflicts have been quite frequent. Many of the major wars have been fought in that area. And also, if you know, if in the north of this region, there's a narrow plain, you know, stretching from the Pyrenees to St. Petersburg. And this is where Napoleon and Hitler used to invade Russia. And there are very few natural barriers in this area that I just mentioned. Therefore, the Russians must push their borders west as far as possible. Again, I'm looking at it from the Russian vantage point here.
Right.
So they have to push their borders west as far as possible in order to create a buffer against would-be adversaries. What NATO and the West are trying to do now, and Ukraine is a major part of this buffer, is try to remove that buffer from Russia. And this is what makes Russia quite nervous and anxious, because it will become extremely vulnerable. This is different from having, you know, NATO expansion to the east. This is actually a very crucial area for Russia's national security interest. And therefore, that's why we see Russia reacting in the way it has been reacting now.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. Now, we know that Russia and the United States remain on a collision course over the rest of the Ukrainian region, with Washington calling on Moscow to pull its troops in Crimea back to their bases. Now, we know that U.S. President Barack Obama and his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, discussed the escalating crisis on telephone for 90 minutes, Dr. Hannes, but apparently that hasn't helped much.
Yeah, not that much. But, well, that's the fact that there is a line, the direct line, so the both sides can talk to each other at such a crisis. It's a good news comparing to the past decades of the Cold War, where it was not that like this. To have a better understanding of what is going on in Ukraine, I think we have to take a broader look of the context in which this crisis is happening.
Right.
In my view, Ukrainian crisis has many different dimensions. We are talking about a crisis which has political, historical, geopolitical, somehow even beyond that, I mean, we can talk about the ethnical factors here involved. this conflict is reflecting somehow the mistrust between East and West. We are talking about a new Cold War between Russia and the West in general, and European Union and United States in particular. So generally speaking, Ukraine is somehow considered by Moscow, as all we know, something that the Russians call it near abroad, or right. the backyard mm-hmm. of the Russian territory. So in that sense, it's very different from any other location. There have been talks about, for example, give and takes in Russia, in the Ukrainian mm-hmm. crisis, and the Syrian crisis, for example. Mm-hmm. But Syria is not comparable, although yes. it is important for Russia, but Ukraine is mm-hmm. somehow totally different case.
And they also call they have basically a terminology called the Russian world. Yes. And they consider Crimea particularly a part of the Russian world.
Exactly. You know, for Russia and also for the European Union and European countries, this whole body of region, I mean, they call it, let's call it Eurasia, from Vladivostok to the east up to the heart of the Europe in the west. So this has been always the place for the grand game between Russian Empire in the past, during the Soviet Union, East and West blocs, and now even that's still there. So for Russia, Ukraine is somehow something which we can call it a very, very significant and important part of the any equation of power
right.
between East and West. So it's understandable that why Russia reacted so furiously when they toppled the regime, which was somehow an ally
Pro-Russian.
Of Moscow, and then we know that Putin now has showing muscles that, okay, it's not that easy that you think that I'm going to give up, and there should be more maybe surprises coming.
But you know, the thing is that the US is threatening Russia with sanctions, but you know, lots of analysts are saying that also Russia could, basically impose some sanctions against the US.
So
it's not as easy as that.
Let's not forget that more than 40% of the energy consumed by Europeans is coming from Russia. So badly dependent
yes.
on the Russian supply of energy. So how they can boycott? They're boycotting themselves if they want to put sanctions. And there is also other cases that make Russians feel comfortable and not that much worried about yes. the consequences. A few years ago, we had the same conflict, the same war in Georgia.
Right.
So there were, again, Westerners and Americans talking about the consequences and sanctions, but they did nothing. I mean, just condemnations, and then the Russia did whatever it wanted to do in that Caucasus region and the borders with Georgia. So Russians are somehow, let's say, confident that these are more rhetoric than something that can be applied or
right.
something in practice.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. Now let's take a short break. After the break, we'll be back with the serious state of affairs in Ukraine at the moment. So please do stay with Central Stage. Hello again and welcome back. Now, the unanimous vote in an emergency session formalized what Ukrainian officials describe as an invasion of Russian troops in the strategic region of Crimea. Russia calls it stabilizing military forces on Ukrainian territory. Professor Entisar, as a political analyst, what's your terminology?
Well, again, you know, what is ironic is that, you know, Crimea was the part that was ceded to Ukraine by Khrushchev. So its historical belonging to Ukraine is very recent and so forth. But nonetheless, it is, you know, now it's viewed as part of Ukraine. But as you know, a previous discussion here, you know, today, you know, very clearly indicated, this is a different piece of land than a lot of other things that surround it. It's not, you know, even Kazakhstan, and which is also important to Russia, but it's very important. And the thing that, you know, a number of things that have been discussed about Ukraine but not mentioned is that there are studies, at least in the West, that indicate that both Crimea and some other parts of Ukraine do contain significant amount of untapped natural gas.
Right.
And we are beginning to hear more and more and more, here in the West particularly, that fracking, this technology that's been used in the U.S. for a while now, and it's produced significant amount of oil and gas, natural gas in the U.S., and has actually is going to make the U.S. Not only self-sufficient, but also the significant importer, exporter of these products. They say they can do that in Ukraine, and, and then they're hoping that they could come up with significant amount of gas in Ukraine, and therefore making Russia irrelevant in this whole energy game that has given Russia that kind of upper hand. I'm not sure how accurate these predictions are. They may or may not be true. But for the sake of the argument, assume that they are true. And in a couple years, Ukraine becomes a major producer and exporter of natural gas to Europe. Therefore, Russia will lose its upper hand completely as an energy supplier to Europe. And remember, Russia, after the Soviet Union, has depended exclusively or heavily on export of energy to maintain its status as a regional power. Russia is not an industrial power anymore. Russia certainly is not an information power.
Right.
It's an extractive power. And if the West can take that away from Russia, Russia will become even a more minor player in its own backyard. And that's why it has become so agitated and worried about future status of Crimea and the shape of the political system that will emerge in Ukraine.
Right. We're just talking now about Crimea, but we know that pro-Russian protests are breaking out in other parts of Ukraine. So Moscow now could send its military elsewhere in Ukraine. So it's not limited to Crimea anymore.
Well, it's not, but I don't think under current circumstances Russia is going to send its own troops in other parts of Ukraine. It's that would be it would be in near suicidal for Russia's arguments and positions that it is defending its interest in Crimea. That would turn that into occupation of another country, and that would generate significant amount of backlash. You would see all kinds of, you know, calls for everything, sanctions and what have you, against Russia. So I don't think Russia at this time is going to take that move, to move troops in other parts of Ukraine. But it will move its troops within Crimea. It moves them from place to place and repositions them and so forth. That should be expected.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. Now, Dr. Khani, let me just read you a quotation from Ukrainian Prime Minister. He said, quote, military intervention would be the beginning of war and the end of any relations between Ukraine and Russia. Is it really the beginning of the end of the relations?
Well, let's call it the beginning of the worsening the relations, but not the end. When we're talking about this crisis, as I said, we should take also look at other factors besides the political issues. The economic factor, which Dr. Antasar mentioned, I do share that view that, well, that is, I mean, a very significant consideration for all sides, Ukraine, the West, and Moscow, when we are talking about this crisis. I mean, I'm not sure how accurate are those figures about the new discovery of the oil and gas resources in Ukraine. But what we are talking about now is a Ukraine and a West, which are both somehow heavily dependent on the supply of energy from right. Moscow. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, Moscow has this very important factor in hand, and which gives it the upper hand. But when we are talking about the whole picture, I mean, again, Ukraine more than ever now looks like a divided nation in my view.
Right.
I mean, there are those forces who believe that it is in the long run interest of the Ukrainian as a nation to somehow tilt towards the West and finally become a member of the European family, a member of the European Union. This surely is a dream for many Ukrainians.
Right.
But on the other side, we are talking about, I'm not sure how many percentage, but a huge number of people who just want to stay again an ally of the Russian government and to somehow that have that traditional alliance with Moscow. So it's very difficult. I mean, it seems that the big loser now, at least for the moment, is Ukraine itself, caught between a rivalry and competition between East and West, between Russia on the one side and the Western European, the West, and the United States on the other side. It's also it's interesting for me that how Russia was somehow, I mean, they hurried to have the confidence of the other player in Asia, in Eurasia, which is China. We know that from the very early days of this crisis, the leaders of two countries, Beijing, Moscow, they were talking to each other, and somehow China shows a kind of support for Russia. So that shows that Russia is well aware of the consequences if it goes global, the crisis. So it's trying to make sure that it will have China behind it if it goes to Security Council or anything else.
In addition to China, we know that Vladimir Putin has made a number of telephone calls with European leaders as well, including Angela Merkel.
Yes, Germany, that's a very good case. I mean, unlike United States or France, which has been criticizing harshly Putin and Moscow for what happened, Angela Merkel, again, maybe I think the most important economic partner of Russia, has been very cautious. I mean, talking about attempts to find a solution. So again, I mean, Russia seems to start a diplomatic campaign. I'm not sure how capable they are to confront that heavy weight coming from the other side, whether or not they will be able to counterbalance the diplomatic initiative by European Union and United States, but they have started in fairly good.
Another very interesting point to me is that when you look at the actually the forces, military forces, they don't there's no marking in their uniform. So, I mean, some analysts are saying that they're Russian, they belong to the Russian military, but no markings. So it seems that
you know, this is a psychological issue.
It's interesting, issue. Isn't it?
It's a very smart point you mentioned. Yes. Russia is doing its best to avoid this perception in the outside world that, okay, we are invading, or we are occupying, or we are waging a war. You know, that's something observable, that Russia do not want such a scenario to be portrayed by the West. And that's why they use that military man in that uniform.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, we basically know that the situation in Ukraine is escalating on a daily basis, and Crimean Parliament Speaker Volodymyr Konstantinov told the news conference that despite this pro-Russian leaning, the people of Crimea don't have problems with Ukrainians, but have problems with radical nationalists and neo-Nazis who played a big role in ousting President Yanukovych. Professor Antsar, he also said Crimea was part of the Russian world and did not welcome NATO. So what do you think he exactly means by the Russian world?
Well, it means historically and culturally, people of Crimea, remember 60% of the population of Crimea is of Russian extraction. Only 24-25% is of Ukrainian origin. And there are other people with, you know, the Crimean Tartars and so forth. So the Russians constitute the majority of the population there. And that by itself tells you that it is, you know, at least culturally speaking, is a Russophile population, basically. And also the point that you just mentioned, the presence of neo-Nazis, that hasn't been covered, I think, extensively here in the West, but it is clear that there is a strong presence of a resurgence of neo-Nazis, people who were very much pro-Nazi Germany, helped Nazi Germany during World War II against the then Soviet Union. There is a reemergence of these groups, and you see them. You see them on the streets. You see their slogans. Even there was a picture of a State Department spokesperson, Victoria Nuland, with some Ukrainians, and to her right was a leader of, I'm not sure if she knew who that person was, but nonetheless it indicates that they are, these people have reached the apex of political power.
Right.
Whether they're you know, growing and they're just a small minority, that I don't know at this time. But I know that this is a point that cannot be easily dismissed. The reemergence of an old Nazi, we can't even call him neo-Nazis. These are the old Nazi movement that is reemerging in Ukraine. That is extremely dangerous, both for Ukraine, for Russia, and for the rest of Europe.
But at the same time, Professor Entisar, Hillary Clinton, we know that she has compared some of the methods actually employed by the Russian president to that of those of Hitler. So probably that sort of comparison is quite dangerous, isn't it? I mean, because she wants to basically run for, most probably she'll run for 2016 U.S. presidential elections.
Yes, I mean, whatever she says at this time, you know, you have to take into account that she's positioning herself for 2016 and trying to portray herself as tough on foreign policy, tough on Russia, tough on Putin. These are things that will buy her points.
Right.
So, I mean, we have to sort of take these statements with a grain of salt.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. Now it's time for today's Central Stage online search, but first we'll have a short break. Hello again and welcome back. Now it's time for today's Central Stage online search, where we go on the internet for you to pick for you what's taken Central Stage online. So let's have a look at our first web page. So Dr. Khani, as you can see, this is the Reuters, the UK edition. And you can see that some people are actually...
Yeah, one of the keywords in the headline is very, very, very interesting.
Yes.
Putin ready to invade, you know, the wording, they choose invasion and wait.
Right.
And this is something that I said Russians want to avoid.
Right.
This is not an invasion that we are doing. Yeah.
So this website is actually representing West's...
Yeah, the Western reading of,
right, of the story. Let's go to our next web page. Right, this is Press TV, and it refers to, I mean, Putin actually is calling everybody. I think he's calling Obama, calling Angela Merkel. So he's had, I think...
Yeah, they appeared very active in diplomacy.
Yes,
yeah.
Lots of telephone calls.
Lots of telephone calls, and also his foreign minister.
Yes, and we have to wait and see what the outcome will be. Right, so let's go to our next web page. So this is the Russian... point aside, so the RT, and sort out who's boss in Kiev, Crimea takes care of itself, that's what Republic's parliament speaker said. And I think it's very interesting, you see this is actually Crimea parliament, and you see the Russian flag, and also there at the top, you also see another Russian flag.
Yeah, the presence has been there for a long time. I mean, it's very difficult for Russians to imagine that one day their flag is not flying right. on the sky in Kremlin.
And I think the RTA's point of view is that basically there is an anarchy in Kiev and nobody knows who's the real boss. So sort out who's boss in Kiev.
Exactly.
I think that was one of the things that the Russian side was, you know, was
so
trying to.
So it also has this message that what's happening in Crimea is somehow a precautionary measure,
yes.
somehow made by Russia and by the Crimean.
Right. So the same anarchy will not
exactly.
spread
happen
to
there, yeah.
yes, Crimea. Let's go to our next web page. So this is CNN's website. Ukraine mobilizes troops amid crisis with Russia. So it's very interesting. Direct, basically saying that Ukraine is also in a position to mobilize forces. To, I think probably that's not very realistic, is it?
No, not it. It's not. It's not. I mean, the headline on the beneath of the picture, Ukrainian in
transition.
This
yeah.
is more accurate. I mean, there is. I mean, we can see that transitional period.
Right.
What's going to happen next? It's very difficult to say, but. It's not something, it's something new and it's a transitional period, I guess.
Right, great. Let's go to our next website. This is from ZDF, the second German channel website, Heute.de. And it's basically the same message that Ukraine is actually putting its troops in preparation and is basically putting them on alert. And just look at that. It's like, it seems like a war zone and probably
yeah.
it's really, we couldn't. Basically, everybody was talking about Syria and other places. We couldn't imagine that the
yeah.
same thing would happen in
would
Ukraine.
Would happen in Ukraine.
And let's go to our last web page. This is from a BR website, Bayerische Rundfunk, the Bayerische Radio.
Yeah.
And this, I think, picture is really interesting because if you look at this soldier, you can't say whether he belongs to the Russian military, to Ukraine military, to Crimea. So no marking at all
marking.
On his
yeah.
right. Great. Thank you very much indeed for your valuable
okay.
comments. Now let's go to another part of the Crimean population, a very important part of Crimean population, which probably not enough attention has been paid to them. And it's actually, we're talking about Muslim Crimean Tatars who account for up to 14%, some estimates say 12, some say even up to 14% of the Crimean population of about 2 million. And they represent a highly mobilized and unified constituency that has consistently been pro-Ukrainian and opposed to pro-Russian, pro-Russian separatism on the peninsula. So, Professor Antisar, so far the Tatars have stayed off the streets and their leaders, just as Ukrainian leaders in Kiev, have exercised sort of a degree of restraint. But what if Russia does not back down and tries to hold on to Crimea?
Well, again, I think politically speaking, the Crimean Tatars are not very organized. They're not an organized group to act for or against particular Ukrainians, you know, or Russians for that matter. They are more worried about their own status, I think. As you mentioned, you know, if you look at it historically, Joseph Stalin pretty much brutally, forcibly expelled almost all of them to Central
yes.
Asia, and they began to come back not very recently. So they're just beginning to resettle and make lives for themselves and so forth. And I'm sure they are very much disturbed by these trends that have happened in Ukraine. And so at this point in time, I don't see them as a political force to tip the balance
right.
for either side.
But Professor,
as you did mention, of course.
Right. There's always a danger that what Stalin actually did to them might be done to them by another Russian you know, leader.
Yes, but the thing is that historically they haven't had a very positive view of the Soviet Union, which it's always associated with Russia, with Moscow. So that part of it hasn't died down, and that's why, you know, if you're going to probably if you ask Crimean Tatars, you know, they would not want to have a stronger Russian influence there, but they're also aware, historically they're aware that this is this is the domain of Russia, and if they cannot antagonize Russia and openly take sides at this point in time. But again, it's one of those tricky things for this population, because they're just recent returnees. Many of them are recent returnees and are just trying to reestablish their lives and have roots in their ancient domain.
Right, great. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now we have just 3 minutes to the end of the show, and there is one question that I'd like to put to both our guests. So first, Dr. Khani, we know that Ukraine is a nation of 46 million. There is the threat of splintering, there's a threat of there are lots of divides in Ukraine. But so what's your prognosis of the future of Ukraine? Do you think it can manage to stay unified?
It all depends on the, how the Ukrainian people can manifest their own willingness to stay together, especially by these things that happen in Crimea. It would be very difficult to be so sure that there will be no somehow disintegration.
Yes.
But again, the other factor, which is very important, are the players from abroad. I mean, United States, European Union and Russia. These three players are somehow, their role is very important for the future of Ukraine, especially for Russians. I mean, it seems that what we are seeing now is the latest, not the last, battle between East and West, between Russia and the West and the United States, in somehow bringing a new balance of power to greater Euro-Asia. And losing this battle for Russia means that, well, they accepted that the European Union has come to their borders and the NATO has come to their borders. That would be something inimaginable for the Russians.
Probably so humiliating.
Exactly,
at the same time.
Exactly. They will be extremely uncomfortable to see this is happening.
Great.
And they are doing their best in order not allow it to happen.
Thank you very much indeed. Now let's go to Professor Antosa. Professor, basically, we'd like to know your prognosis of the future of Ukraine. Will it manage to remain unified, or rather we'll see the country split?
No, I think geographically Ukraine will remain unified, but the status of the Crimean Peninsula, which is really at the very tip of Ukraine, that may be contested for some time to come. But as a whole, the country will remain unified. The question is whether it will move further and further towards the West, or will try to keep a balance between the West and Russia. This is again, as was just mentioned, it's an important game, if you would, for Russia. If Russia loses this game somehow, this will probably be maybe not a devastating blow, but certainly a very serious blow to the status of Russia as a great power.
Okay.
Russia already has lost its status as a superpower, and its great power status will be lost too.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. Unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for the moment. But before I go, I'd like to thank again my top guests. We actually had Professor Nader Entisar and Dr. Mohammad Hassan Khani, both established political scientists. As always, your insights are much appreciated. Thanks very much for coming, for talking to us, and of course for those insights. So until next week and another edition of Central Stage, from me, our guests today, and the rest of the team here in Tehran, it's goodbye for now. Thanks very much indeed for watching. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great to have you. Thank you.